The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 29th of September, 2020. On the podcast today, Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Tuple, discusses their trading statement, which reveals them achieving £1.6 million of annualized savings. Also on the podcast, Neil Rickett, CEO of Vesarion, explains the significance of them forming the Vesarion Graphene Advisory Panel. Plus, Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel, discusses Novacyt's multi-hundred million pound contract with the Department of Health and Social Care for its COVID testing kits. Since January this year, Novacyt's share price has risen by 2,700%. Also on the podcast, I have two lists for you at the end of the podcast. Two lists. Top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. No guessing which ones are number one. And the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 visions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. And also you can check out our COVID-19 index. No guessing for which is the top riser there. It's Novacyt up 21% to 570. And the biggest faller is Fusion Antibodies, down 9% to 160. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk. We can all see lots of other content, articles, podcasts and videos.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Tuple, T-O-O-P. Andy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Good morning, and you've released a trading update, and we're going to get into that, because some questions there to ask you about that. Before we do, as always, if someone doesn't know what Tuple's about, can you explain what the business is, please, Andy?
Yes, certainly. Tuple PLC are a dedicated telecoms company serving the UK small business market. That's in excess of 250,000 UK small businesses that we serve, from a mixture of simple data connectivity into offices or into homes, through large hosted voice over IP platforms that cover multitudes of sort of national premises across the UK.
Excellent stuff. Okay, now, early in the year, you made an acquisition. Can you give us a brief overview of that business, if you could, Andy, then?
Yeah, DMSL offers sort of a portfolio of business services and products to, you know, way over 250,000 UK small businesses, and it's been established for now over 20 years. All of their products and propositions are designed to deliver collaboration and driving UK businesses to communicate better, and as importantly, to communicate more cost effectively, literally wherever the employee chooses to work from. They have a significant partner channel of over 100 IT and telecom specialists across the UK, delivering their services, their support and consultancy across the complete range of the DMSL products. The portfolio of products and services is extensive, from single phone line to multi-site hosted VoIP platforms and full data center connectivity. They are the longest established BT Premier partner, but at the same time, they remain carrier agnostic for the customer, depending on the customer's requirements, location, speed of delivery and bandwidth requirements of the customer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And explain, you know, what you've achieved since the acquisition then, if you could, Andy.
Yeah, we did a complete review of the wider group and commenced an integration to deliver one group and one company. And we've reorganized the group into four main brands: Tuple.com, which we all know, DMSL.co.uk, broadbandandphones.co.uk, and checkthatcompany.co.uk. As part of the review, our initial due diligence and acquisition rationale was to deliver £600,000 worth of in-year savings. We then subsequently upgraded that through our interim results to the market, and we revised that upwardly to a figure of £960,000 worth of annual savings that would be delivered through the integration and the synergies that were identified. And today we're giving further guidance to raise that annual saving from 960,000 to an annual saving through the integration and the synergies of £1.6 million worth of in-year savings and synergies.
Yeah, it's a big chunk there. So you say between synergies and savings, but how do you actually achieve this? What do you do?
Well, I think what we ought to do first is just recap on why you embark on M&A. And there should be three key drivers. Number one is scale. Number two is skill set. And number three is synergies. Not all acquisitions tick all three boxes. But in the case of DMSL, it actually ticked all of the three boxes. And as we rapidly deployed the integration of the two businesses, it became evident that there were significantly more opportunities within the skill set of the people within DMSL that allowed us to drive the integration further. We were therefore able to materially change our headcount assumptions. We were able to drive further supply chain savings than originally thought and expected. But I caveat that with saying we need to be really clear. You know, we are going to deliver from today £130,000 a month of savings. But that's not savings at all cost. You know, the business is still well structured and is structured now as one company going forwards. And the structure that we've put in place, despite the material cost savings, fully supports the growth ambitions of the business.
I see. And you mentioned there this is set to transform the cash position. Explain that if you could, Andy.
Well, DMSL in particular has a history of being a cash generative business. Coupled with the 1.6 million of annual savings that we will realise from today and have been realising over the last 30 days, then the company's anticipated timeline to profitability and cash generation is being materially accelerated. The company now has a multitude of diverse revenue streams. So historically, the Tuple business continually consumed working capital for every single customer that it bought on board and it had won. And it waited for gross profit sort of in the second year of the contract. Now we're able to drive customer growth where we receive upfront immediate gross profit. So you've got a number of things. You've got the history of DMSL being a cash generative business. You've got £1.6 million worth of annual savings that we will realise from today, and a complete transformation of the trading of the Tuple business, where from day one we can make upfront gross profit of customers that we acquire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent start. And you mentioned there you're expecting a decline in headline revenues in the short term. Can you tell us more about that, please, Andy?
We're dedicating the focus of all of our activity on purely margin-enhancing customers, both directly and obviously through the channel partners. That underpins the strategy of acceleration to transform our cash position over the next 12 months. And of course, you know, we'll update the investors as we get to our end-of-year results, and we look forward to it, in December of this year.
Yeah. And do you know what? Last 6 months has been, you know, transformational for so many businesses, from positive to negative. How has, Tuple seen the business in the lockdown periods? How have you dealt with that and coped with it? And what's the overall effect then, Andy?
Well, clearly the wider trading environment remains what I would say somewhat subdued for the moment, as most businesses deal with the COVID impact. As a board, we continually monitor the situation and we have to respond accordingly in line with the government guidelines. Protect our staff, protect our people, protect our customers. But despite this, I would argue that actually as a sector, we've traded through lockdown as robustly as we could possibly trade. And that's because if you think about what's happened with lockdown, data connectivity has become significantly important. You know, the new world forces people, you know, to work from home. And for sure, many businesses, you know, are still not operating today and some are unlikely to come back again. But while people are being forced to work from home, then that puts an even greater demand on their data connectivity and their bandwidth requirements, where households now are accommodating three times or four times people in a working day working from home. They need more speed, they need more bandwidth. So our sector has a purpose to play in what is a challenging environment. But if I, you know, if I look at it and summarize it, I think we've performed satisfactorily through lockdown. But our trading in August returned to more normal conditions as many businesses emerged and they reviewed their critical expenditure on things like IT and telecoms. And if you then look at our order intake for August, actually we finished August in the DMSL B2B business, which is the key business. Our orders were 14% up August 20 versus August 2019. And then if I look up orders up until last night, order intake up until last night, September has provided further growth based on September 2019. Mm-hmm. So we look at it, you know, as positively as we can look at it, despite, you know, the economic and the pandemic environment that we all exist within.
Yeah, well, exactly. I'm just thinking of that now. I was going to say, you know, what does the future hold for Toowoomba? But we should all be wary of predicting the future. We never saw the pandemic coming. But what's your thoughts, Andy, Toowoomba's future?
Very clearly, our macro drivers, which are expected to drive substantial growth for the group, I think all are still remain in place. That's namely the government's commitment to rolling out fibre to the premise, data connectivity, the mobile networks upgrading from 4G to 5G. And the board remains optimistic about, you know, the company's future growth. And the rollout of fibre to the premise is happening. You know, I live in a very, very small Hertfordshire village. Mm-hmm. Up until 60 days ago, you know, I struggled to get 1 meg worth of broadband speed to the door. Less than 60 days ago, Openreach delivered full fibre to the premise. And I'm now enjoying 300 megs worth of download and 100 megs worth of upload. So we can see it's happening. We can see those drivers are still in place. One of the key drivers for us in this period of time is the move towards people working from home and small businesses, relocating their businesses, you know, in the home environment. You know, so despite the outbreak of COVID-19 and the resultant decrease in economic activity, the conditions in which Toowoomba exist, in my view, are set to thrive and remain unaffected in some ways. So the outlook is positive for our sector, with more people permanently switching to working from home who need more reliable telecommunications. Working from home is a key strategy, and mobility is a key strategy for all of our products and propositions.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Andy, well, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making here, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add Toowoomba to their watch list, please.
Number one, it's a sector that is as robust as any can be in the current economic and pandemic climate. Number two, a business that has gone through material transformation, setting itself up for growth and cash transformation. And number three, a board and an operating board that brings material sector experience in both organic and M&A growth with many, many years, experience in the telco sector.
Excellent stuff. Andy, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks for your time, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion. VRS is ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Pleased to be here today, sir.
Yeah, it's always a nice, you know, get update here. And, of course, listen, you've announced an RNS here called Advisory Panel. So it's very interesting to see what this means, what the significance of this. But as always, Neil, I hate to leave people behind. As you say, a lot of people working from home. A lot of people, and it's seen by the stats, apparently, a lot of people have started investing or looking to invest and all that stuff. So I know we have some new listeners all the time listening. So I know you're very, you know, a regular on the podcast. But for people not aware of Vesarion, though, can you just explain what you're about, please?
Yeah, sure. So Vesarion is a company that I started in 2011. We listed in 2013. And since then, we've been developing technology with UK universities and then exploiting it. So making it into the real world, really, from the laboratory. What we're focused on at the moment is the wonder material graphene and bringing that to production.
Yeah, well, and also, I know about graphene. Of course, I've talked to you many times, done some research on it. But like I said, for people not familiar with graphene, they may have heard of it, you know, being touched upon, but they're not quite sure about it. Could you explain why, you know, what's the big noise about graphene? Why is it so special?
Well, graphene is part of a brand new industry, to be honest. So graphene is the first material of maybe 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 new materials that can be kind of used in everyday life to really change things. So they improve the strength, they improve the electrical conductivity, they improve the thermal conductivity of items that we use and take for granted. And, you know, our job is to get that technology out there and to start using it to enable new technologies as well, such as electric vehicles. And so we're working on batteries, supercapacitors, but also lightweighting for the aircraft industry and a number of other industries that we're involved in, including construction.
Yeah, so they can have so many real-world applications. And like you said, you are, we're starting to see... And like I said, with any new sort of commodity like this, new substance and whatever, it has to be tested and takes a long time, of course, because you can't just change an entire industry, for example. Or all of a sudden, you know, plane manufacturing, you're going to just change everything. And truck graphene, they've got to test it highly, and then loads of times. So you've got things like that and batteries. So we are at the start of, I suppose, commercialization in graphene. It's still in its infancy as a commercial industry. So so this is, I suppose this is linked to the advisory panel, really, isn't it? So explain what you're doing with the advisory panel and why have you set one up?
So what we've always been very aware of is that, you know, we need to set ourselves up with a high degree of confidence from not only our shareholders, but also from our clients and our customers. And so the advisory panel is all about bringing together the good and the great of the graphene industry, getting them into a room, and then defining the strategy that the company will be pursuing over the next few years. It's also about cementing and concreting all of these relationships that we already have, you know, whether that's with Manchester or Cambridge or the graphene flagship or Innovate or any of these big organizations, and getting them all in a room, getting their really great ideas, and then really helping to drive the company to the potential that it can achieve.
Yeah. And you said, like you said, it's going to help, you know, commercialize these current and future technology, including G-Scale. For people not familiar with that, explain that if you could, Neil.
So a couple of weeks ago, we announced that Innovate UK would award us the largest loan application, which was £5 million for a project called G-Scale. In that project, we have G stands for graphene and scaling up our graphene processes, because we have a portfolio of processes. Then we have S, which stands for SEAT, which is really about how we use graphene in the aerospace industry and in carbon fiber composites specifically. And so it's a portfolio of projects. The C is for concrete, and that's about construction projects. The A is arch, which is about thermoplastics and polymers. So getting graphene into the plastics that we use, everything from packaging to construction, as I said before. L is leisure, which is all about textiles, and it's all everything from glass frames right the way through to clothing. I'm working with some of the largest companies there. And then the last one, E, is about elastomers. So that's everything from oil and gas applications that we've talked about in the past, where we're trying to improve the performance of the seals and other parts in downhole, right the way through to tires, which is one of the widest uses of elastomers.
Yeah. And if you could put it on say your journey, Vasarian, in commercializing graphene on a say percentage scale, I don't know if it's possible that, but where are you now, you know, on your journey with graphene and in its development and where you hope to be? What would you say?
So a few years ago, we were making very niche products, you know, the Richard Mille watch we were involved in, where we supplied the graphene, you know, a handful of components. And to be honest, it really pushed the business at that time. So, you know, this technology started off being, you know, half a gram a week, and now we're kind of at the ton level. You know, the G-Scale project is really to get that output even higher to really dominate this industry. Now, what we're starting to see is, I think you've got a couple of the face masks. We've responded very quickly to the COVID issues. We're a speedboat, not a big liner, so we can move very quickly, adapt very quickly. This is, you know, this is how this technology is moving so quickly. So I know some people think that it's really, really slow, but if you compare it against a lot of the technologies that are very similar, carbon fiber, steel, silicon. You know, you can see that not only do we have a wide breadth of products that we're trying to work on, as I said, everything from batteries to construction, but also a wide range of materials as well. So several different derivatives of graphene, and then we're working on the materials that come after that as well.
Yeah. And will that always be the case, or do you think you'll narrow the focus to a certain area as time goes on?
Well, as a management team, we're very risk averse, and we don't like to put all our eggs in one basket. So we are very focused around these, five commercial opportunities in G-Scale, mm-hmm. and we're pursuing those very, very quickly. I know a lot of people got confused that because the project is, takes 2 years, does that mean it's going to be 2 years till we get products? Well, that's not the case. Each one of these projects is split down into projects below that. Some of them are easily achievable, and we hope to be able to, deliver results very quickly. Some of them are slightly longer term. And so it's just about having that diversity within what we're doing. So we are focused. We know exactly what we've got to do. The team knows exactly what we've got to do. It's a great team. It's been joined more recently by a number of other people. And, that provides us with the bandwidth to be able to take on more projects.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Neil. Well, as always, if someone likes the sound of the progress you're making here but are not yet following the story, let's get them to hit that follow button if they like the sound of it. So three reasons, Neil, why they should hit that follow button and add Vesarion to their watch list, please.
So the first thing is that graphene is the technology of today. This is a technology which could define a complete industry. The second reason is that the connections and the contacts that the company has got through its journey, as we were talking about, with Manchester, Cambridge, and central government, means that it's in a very, very strong position to be able to exploit that. The third thing is the diversity and the quality of the commercial opportunities that we've got in front of us. We're working with some of the largest companies in the world, and they're very keen to use our technology in their products. So for me, as a large holder, that means that I'm delighted with the progress of the company.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Neil, thanks for that, fella, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel. You all right, fella?
How you doing, Justin?
I'm good. Now, today we're going to talk about Novacyt, because we did say we're going to talk about it a while back. In fact, their interims came out a while back, and I did say they've knocked it out of the park. And if you look at the comps from previous year, I'll give you an example. H1, first half of 2019, their revenue was 7.2 million euros. This year, 72 million euros. Yep. That's times X. And last year, they made a loss of 1.2 million euros. This year, 40 million euro profit for the first 6 months. I mean, and I tweeted out saying these guys have the crown as far as the testing, the COVID testing stocks are concerned, because they are doing it. Others are going to be developing tests. But these are, I was surprised. There's quite a muted response in the share price. And now today they've announced two new bits of news. But the significant one is the contract, isn't it, from Department of Health and Social Care. That is phenomenal. Yeah. And yet the share price is only up 20% again. I don't understand it. This values them at 400 million. Take us through this, because I think people are missing something here, and I can't understand why it's not risen further. I don't hold any stock here. Do you hold stock in this company?
No, I don't hold any stock. We do act for them. We are their nomad and broker.
Okay. But I wish I'd held stock. If I look at the chart there, it's done phenomenally well, isn't it? Literally, if I go back, let me just look at the chart here. If I just go back, just put it in context. It's at 560 a share now. Literally, in 30th of Jan, they were 19 pence. Wow.
Me too. I wish I held stock. I couldn't agree with you more. So definitely today is a very good announcement. The Department of Health announcement is it's unique. It's a pretty big contract. I haven't seen very many contracts of this size for AIM companies. So it's 150 million sterling contract to be deployed within the next 10 to 14 weeks. Okay. It's effectively a purchase order for that amount. Now, it's to get these testing units that are testing at the point of need. So really, it's to deploy testing in hospitals rather than what they've been doing to date, which they've been doing very well. As you've said, they have a run rate in the first half of about 75 million. Probably going to see a higher run rate in the second half. But, you know, that's because of the prorated number of months that COVID's been going on in H1. We know that, you know, we're going to have a full 6 months of centralized testing in the second half. But this is all about, this contract is incremental to that because it's all about deploying these machines that they have, which are their PCR machines at the point of need. So it's, you know, not about centralized testing. It's about getting the tests to the patients, closer to the patients. And therefore, the turnaround time, which is 60 minutes for this test, is really fast.
So these tests, let me ask a question. These tests, for example, as it is now, you have to go to a center, you get tested by somebody, they put the swabs in you, it goes away, you get sent back, and if you're positive, they'll tell you if you're not. But these are now, correct, what, in clinics and in hospitals? So they're,
exactly, okay, exactly. These are going out to hospitals primarily, I think, first, because, you know, there's only 300 units in that first batch. Mm. But, you know, it gives you an idea of the scale of this. You know, 300 units to generate 150 million in revenues. Now, wow, it's not as much the machines, it's the number of tests per machine. Yeah, you know what I mean? Afterwards. So the machines are going to be running full tilt, right? Testing in hospitals, okay? Then there is the astonishing thing is, look at the second phase of the contract, another 700 machines. So if you multiply whatever, prorate it, we're looking at a potentially £500 million contract.
Plus, yeah,
That's in the RNS. That's what we're talking about here.
And yet they're valued, they're valued at 400 million. And I'm just thinking, the only thing I can think in my mind is why isn't re-rating further up, and it is in multiples of its current valuation, is that they see, people see this as just an opportunity, a window of opportunity lasting, say, 6-12 months, because there's a suit, the head of Operation Warp Speed, you know, it's like something from Star Trek in America, but the Operation Warp Speed, which is this program of, you know, big pharma companies getting, you know, being speeded up to get to a vaccine, that the head, Dr. Slowey, said that he expects one to be, or Pfizer, just before the elections, which is a nice coincidence for Donald Trump, but Pfizer are going to be announcing end of October, in the results in their phase 3, if FDA approved. He reckons vulnerable people will, in America, be vaccinated before the end of the year, and he said the rest of the population by quarter one. So is that the reason why this isn't rising further? Because people see maybe testing will still be done, of course, but maybe the volume will start to sort of decrease slowly over the next 6-12 months, or what?
I think, okay, so that is where the detail, the most important detail is, do we think that's the length of the window? So even on Trump's, you know, forecast, okay, Pfizer's forecast, whoever it is that said, you know, we'll get this all done by Q1 next year, even on that basis, this contract will be, as per the contract in the RNS today, will be deployed. So the 150 million is going to be deployed within the next 10 to 14 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Maybe even faster, and maybe the second contract will be triggered before then, because 300 hospital, you know, 300 machines is not very many. Even 1,000 machines is not that many. So, you know, it's possible that such a contract will be fully deployed, but way before that very ambitious timeline of testing stopping in 6 months' time.
Yeah,
which, by the way, I really don't believe that's going to be the case. I think testing is going to go on. Until 22 and further,
I mean, testing, of course, will still go on. I think at like pretty low volumes, but it'll still go on for a long time. And not only that, though, if you look at the half year results here, you can see the margins they've got. So they're generating good. I'm assuming the margins are the same, but off the revenue of 72 million, they made 40 million after tax to the owners. Gross margins are 83% there. And so they are generating real cash here. It's not like it's a low margin business. So, I just can't understand why this isn't valued more highly. But again, I was surprised it didn't re-rate. It went up 5% on those half year results. And now it's gone up just by 20% a day. So I'm thinking, and yet there are other COVID testing stocks out there, not yet producing anything, not yet earning any money, that are valued close to their valuation. I don't understand what's going on, really. So
Well, that's just it. I mean, this is cash in the bank for real now. Mm. You know, these are real orders. They're reliable orders. We all know the situation that there aren't enough. There's not enough testing going on. this is a solution for testing at the point of need. So it's getting the tests closer to the patients and to the, you know, to where the need is. So it's phase two of, you know, testing, just as we've described in the past. You know, it's what we were all expecting. It's now actually happening. So I would expect more of this, you know, not less. This isn't going to be nothing. I cannot see anything, including a vaccine, stopping the need for testing anytime soon. But, certainly not on the timeline. Certainly not on the timelines of these contracts. You know, these are contracts that are, I guess, at some level overdue, right? Yeah. So, you know, it's good. It's good that it's good to see them happening. They're substantial. You're right. They're extremely, you know, relatively speaking, lucrative in the sense that they're high margin. You know, they're in. I would expect them to be in line with historic margins of H1 margins, basically. And you know, it's all incremental too to Novacyt. So, you know, back to your share price point, just, you know, I guess investors should just do the math. It isn't that complicated. You take you know, 150 million, you're probably going to clear 100 on that. And then you ask yourself whether you think this phase two is going to be deployed. And, you know, 300 machines for the UK is quite a small number. Even 1,000 machines is quite a small number, given the outright need. Just say this, you know, the contracts to be deployed over the next 10 to 14 weeks. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, are we going to, what happens after 14 weeks? Yeah. Even if there's a possibility the second phase of the contract will be triggered before the end of the 10 to 14 week period. You know what I mean? But even if you took it out to 14 weeks, what happens after that? Yeah. Just the world stops on these 300 machines, sort it all out for everybody?
Yeah. And also, I doubt it. Yeah, and also from a political point of view, you know, the UK has to be seen to be delivering here, because there's been so many fudges and messes up and all that stuff. They've got to start doing something. They've been criticised highly, as have many governments, you know. So, so it's, I mean, the political will and wind is behind Novacyt as well. So, very impressive. I mean, you know, and fair play. And I think, you know, if they've been at the sweet spot here, and they're probably, it's bittersweet for them because COVID, of course, is a horrible thing. It's done damage to a lot of people, a lot of environments. But I got to say, if you can look at any one company that's massively benefited and really pivoted into the sweet spot, it's been Novacyt. Phenomenal comparison between last year's figures and this year's figures. Yeah, absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, I mean, look, you know, to your point, we all want a vaccine to happen faster. You know, everybody wants this. It's in everyone's interest to get this crisis over with. But I guess the reason Novacyt is doing so well is because they're providing a solution now. They're not providing a solution that's going to happen tomorrow. They're part of the solution that's being deployed today. Yeah. Do you see what I mean? Which brings me back to your point against, you know, competitive products. There is risk in switching products. There's risk in trying technologies you don't know anything about. You know what I mean? The key point with Novacyt is they're delivering technologies today that are part of the immediate need and immediate solution, you know, filling the immediate need. Yeah. So that's why they're doing so well, because there's an actual overwhelming need that they have a solution for.
Okay. Yeah. Well, listen, let's not talk about it anymore, because I'm gutted that I missed out on a 2,700% rise since January, which is early, let's be honest. Just one of those, you know, it will sort out your portfolio. I don't care what state your portfolio is in. If you just had one of those and held on to that, that would be sorted out. But marvellous stuff. Vadim, thanks, fella. It's a phenomenal amount of news. They've done so well at Novacyt. And hopefully, we'll speak to you next week, fella, all right?
It's very good news, yeah. Excellent. Thanks, Justin. Thanks for that.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Salt Lake Potash, 26.5 pence, non-mover. At four, Rosling Data Technologies, of course, non-mover again, 6.25 pence. At three, Greatland Gold, up 3.33% to 20.15 pence. At two, Avacta, down 8% to 139. And at one, Novacyt, of course, just talked about that with Vadim in the podcast, up 22% to 570. Phenomenal results from those. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it is InStem. Is that my kind of... No, sorry, at five, it's Novacyt. Come on, that's got to be their number one, really. That's what was most read. I don't know what most read is. I'm sure Novacyt must be most read. It is most read, Novacyt. At four, let me just check this out, Vesarin Advisory Panel, at three, escape and directorate change. In fact, this is John Story coming on the board, non-executive director. Very sharp, John. He's made a lot of money in business and investing, and I think he'd be a great asset to the board of Escape Hunt. And by the way, the results are amazing. We've had an unprecedented in the lockdown of businesses. Leisure, especially in hospitality, has been hit. But the resilience of Escape Hunt was very good, I thought. And literally, they weren't far trading where they were previously. So, and in fact, before the lockdown, they were up 44%, like for likes. And valued at 6.8 million with 4 million in cash. And rollout. They've got a pathway to a 10 bagger here. 10 times the valuation. Midterm, 20 sites. Longer term, 50 sites. And that there would generate 7.5 million of EBITDA a year on a valuation of 10, which is normal for leisure sites. That's 75 million. Like I said, they are 6.5 or 6.8 million today. Okay, I'm biased. I do own shares, money, pretty much, for doing all research. At two, Tuple, trading statement. Andy's on the podcast, of course. And at one, Amiga Diagnostics. It's an investor presentation. I think some of their followers there have been hitting the like button on that, regardless of Novacyte's news, which I think should be at the top there, really. But it's the most read. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.